Yesterday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that 1 in 4, or 3.2 million teenage girls, has a sexually transmitted disease. Rates of infection were significantly higher among African American girls. This study provides a national snapshot of infection rates among girls aged 14 to 19. We'll talk about the numbers and how to bring them down in a minute, but we want to hear from you. What are your questions about the findings and about prevention and, of course, treatment? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. But first, STDs and teenage girls. We begin with NPR's science correspondent, Brenda Wilson. She joins us here in Studio 3A.
Hello. How
are you, Robert? Thanks for being here. So break these numbers down for us.
Okay. You know, we've known for some time that we have a serious chlamydia and HPV, human papillomavirus problem. And this one, though, looks at just young teenage girls between the ages of 14 and 19. If you look at the main finding that I think that was struck so many people that was so alarming, it is that 1 in 4 girls overall has had at least one of a fairly sort of common, you know, sexually transmitted disease. I don't mean to downplay it, but these have been widespread and millions of people get, there are like 19 million STD infections in the United States each year. But in this case, it was, I mean, the most common one that occurred was HPV. And this one, in which 4 of the strains of this virus is associated with cervical cancer and genital warts. The other one was, the second highest was chlamydia. 4% of young girls, 4% of them. And there are no symptoms when you have chlamydia, but it can result in later years, if it's not treated, in ectopic pregnancies, chronic pelvic inflammatory disease. And so it needs to be screened and treated, but we don't necessarily screen for it commonly. And overall, let's see, trichomoniasis, the rates were lower, about 2.5%, and 2% infected with general herpes. I think the big thing, the other sort of big fact that came out of this was that 1 in 2 of these young women, African-American girls between 14 and 19, 50% of them,
yeah,
1 in 2.
That really stood out. What do we know about that? Do we know why African-American girls have a much higher rate than seeing the overall population?
What I think it essentially means, because it doesn't mean that young girls at that age in the African American community are any more sexually active than young girls in any other community. What it means is that there's a reservoir there. And so therefore, if you've got a pool of these infections within the community and people are much more likely to be involved with people within their own community, then you've got, that's what happens. They're more likely to be exposed. They run a greater risk of being exposed to the these infections.
And I know this sounds naive, but if you have a sexually transmitted disease, you've had sex. They aren't passed any other way?
It turns out that condoms can't prevent it. It has been, and they've tested this, because there's been some questions about whether condoms can protect against all sexually transmitted diseases. They can reduce the risk in some instances. In the case of HPV, they reduce it. I think it was about 70%. You're less likely to become infected with it. But HPV, you can be exposed through other means. I mean, among the young women in this study, and I don't have the number handy, but there were some of the young women who had the infection and had not had sex. And this has been shown in other studies. Chlamydia, the same thing. People develop sometimes sores, etc. And if the condom isn't put on right, you can be exposed and the virus can be, I mean, the disease can be transmitted.
Okay, so this doesn't necessarily tell us a lot about behaviors. This is a medical fact that we're dealing with in this study, and you have to extrapolate in some cases to what kind of behaviors have led to this. Is that right?
I think it does tell us that young people are very, you know, are sexually active, probably a lot more so than their parents realize, which is why the CDC recommends that all young women between the ages, starting at age 11, be vaccinated against HPV, which can prevent that infection, the ones that lead to cervical cancer in 70% of the cases.
We're going to bring in a few of our callers now. Shannon is calling us from Little Rock, Arkansas. Go ahead, Shannon.
Yes, I just want to say that I do agree with those statistics, and I think that starting a vaccination at the age of 11 is a wonderful idea. When I was the age of 14, my girlfriends and I, we started having sex early, and by the age of 16, I was on birth control pills, you know, and we did catch sexual diseases. I had gonorrhea, I had another girlfriend that had syphilis and genital warts and all that, and it was very common, and the education was very lacking. Our parents, they were terrified to discuss the issue with us. And even now, parents do not want to touch on that basis. And there are children as young. I have two myself. You know, I have a daughter and she's 7. And she's, you know, in the second grade. And they're already discussing issues such as playing games, hide and go get, where the kids hide. You catch them and you kiss on them and touch them in places that, you know, they shouldn't be touched. So I do agree. I mean, I totally 100% understand, and I hope that more people understand that it's serious. And if we stop it at an early age and kind of prevent a lot of these problems, then, you know, we can kind of stop some of the abuse that goes with it.
Thanks, Shannon. Let's see what Brenda Wilson has to say.
I guess I did have one. I was sort of curious, and I had a question for Shannon herself. She's gone? Okay. What I would have liked to have known was at the age of 14, who Shannon was having sex with. Because I think that what happens when young girls are 14, and studies have also shown this, they're much more likely to be having sex with an older partner, someone 18, 19, or 20, and therefore at a greater risk.
Well, let's bring in Dr. Charles Wibblesman. He's a pediatrician at Kaiser Permanente in San Francisco and a member of the Committee on Adolescence of the American Academy of Pediatrics. He joins us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Robert.
Now, as we heard from Brenda Wilson, these numbers aren't entirely new. We've heard some of this before. When you heard about this study, was there anything that stood out as different from past findings?
Yes, I have to comment that certainly when you look at some of the numbers, we did know that certainly as far as 16-year-olds, 50% are sexually active. And you look at another study by the CDC, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which was most recently published 2 years ago. This is very significant because they actually looked at the number of adolescents under the age of 13 who had been sexually active, and it ranges as high as from 10% to 25% under the age of 13. So we know that these young people are actually having sex, whether it's oral or vaginal, another type of sex. I think one of the things that this study, and again, this study is really, when you look at the details, it was done 4 years ago in 2004. The data that they have on HPV is something that we don't normally see. Usually, you see the numbers from the CDC as far as reported cases of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. And we know certainly in young adults, adolescents 15 to 19, young adults 19 to 24, over 1 million cases of chlamydia reported every year, and the majority is in this age group. So we know that this is occurring. But I think when they started, when they talked about one out of four, and they also include trichomonas, HPV, along with chlamydia and herpes, this was a real eye-opener.
Now, I remember hearing, I don't know much about it, the HPV virus, vaccine. And,
yes.
And are these numbers from before people started to talk about that? Or does this reflect what we've seen after a number of series of ads and an outreach by public agencies on the HPV vaccine?
Well, you know, when they look at the numbers here, we're going back 4 years, and the HPV vaccine has only been out a couple years. They tested for the presence of the virus. Now, again, when you look at these young women, HPV virus is kind of everywhere, and a lot of times people could be exposed to the HPV virus, not just from vaginal intercourse, but from petting, from touching, etc. So I think these numbers on the – I think that, you know, when the vaccine was developed, everyone realized that this virus is everywhere, and that's why it is so important that young women starting early as age 9 can receive this vaccine. That's why this vaccine was so important, because not only does it prevent genital warts, but also two of the strains that cause cervical cancer. So I think it was more of awareness. I think if we had talked about this study today and there was no HPV vaccine, I don't think there would be the significance of the meaning there.
Let's go to a phone call. Gabriella is on the air. She's joining us from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hi, I was wondering, when I heard about this study, I was wondering about what the statistics were for adolescent boys, because I know HPV is something that is only detected in girls, but how does that affect the numbers of other STDs in young adolescent boys?
Well, that's a very good question, because when you look at the reported STIs, especially chlamydia, gonorrhea, and the numbers are reported more in females because they're being screened more, they're being tested more. Again, with the HPV, a young woman who has a pap smear, again, an HPV is part of that test. We don't do pap smears on young men and normally. And so, you know, to really gauge what is the incidence of the HPV virus among young men is very frightening. However, I think everyone should be assured that just as we were able to develop this vaccine for young women, just a year or two away, we will also have this vaccine for young men. And that's very important, because if you were able to test young men, if you did skin samples for the HPV virus, you would probably find just as much of the virus in young men as you do in young women.
Brenda Wilson from NPR's Science Desk. I noticed reading at least the reports on the studies, boys are not really mentioned, but of course they're involved in the whole process.
I think that part of the problem is, one, if you haven't done the studies, and they're not exactly the easiest population to capture. It requires some degree of cooperation on their part. Although there have been, as far as I know, that's as much as I can say. I mean, the doctor may know about other studies which have involved young adolescent men. These are not diseases that necessarily which you find symptoms, so it wouldn't automatically come to their attention. I think young girls also, and I could be wrong on this score to some extent, may be more sexually active. As I said before, inducted into sex sometimes by older boys.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to another caller, Crystal. Crystal joins us from Metropolis, Illinois.
Hi. My question is, did you find that the results of these questions varied by state? And if they did, did those differences correlate with the sexual education that's provided in that state?
Oh, interesting. Do we know about that, Dr. Charles Wibblesman?
The answer to that, when you look at the study, I don't know the specific states where these 857 young women were tested. However, if you look at the data from the CDC, there is definitely what called the southeastern western majority. It's almost like looking at the delegates in the election. I mean, there is a significant larger number of STIs reported in the southeast and the west, especially for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And again, this has to do with testing and screening. You know, one of the things that we have today, which we didn't have 4 or 5 years ago, is the ability to screen young women and young men with a urine sample for both gonorrhea and chlamydia. As these screening tests are available more and more, they're non-invasive, be much easier for clinicians and for young people to get tested. A lot of times a young woman, if she wanted to be tested for chlamydia or gonorrhea, this meant she would have to have a gynecologic exam. That is not true anymore. So as we have these increased screening tools, less invasive procedures, more and more people will be tested, and also will be reporting more and more cases.
Brenda Wilson, obviously this study doesn't get into it, but do we have various ideas about how different forms of sex education would impact these kind of numbers?
One of the things that they have found, and I noticed that Planned Parenthood came out with an observation and a comment yesterday that, 17 of the states do comprehensive sex education and have turned down abstinence-only funding. It is that a number of studies have shown that abstinence-only studies don't necessarily work. Of course, there have been some recently to the effect that they do. Of course, abstaining is the one sure way to make sure that you don't become infected. On the other hand, what happens if that's the only education you received, you may not be prepared. You may not, therefore, have a consciousness that you should take precautions against disease or against pregnancy if you have not had comprehensive sex education. And that is what studies show, that young people who haven't had that education often are not thinking about those things.
Thanks for your phone call, Crystal. Let's go to Helen. Helen joins us from Lancaster, Ohio. Thanks, Helen.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm doing this from a different perspective. I'm an 85-year-old woman who was married for 60 years and had wonderful sex all that time. But what I would like to know is how come there isn't more emphasis put on the diseases and let the young people know that sex is not a sport, and I don't care how many boys want to straddle around and how much you want the boy to like you, you do not have to have sex with him. That would make you a more powerful, wonderful person, and you would have respect for yourself, which is important. And if these diseases keep happening, one day this girl is going to fall in love, and she is going to have a terrible life with diseases and scars and tissues. She might never get pregnant again.
Well, Helen, thanks for the comment, and we wanted to see if Dr. Wibblesman had something short to say about this. Can these numbers and these statistics be used to help in prevention?
Very definitely. Again, when we look at these numbers, this certainly is an affidavit for getting the HPV vaccine for all young women now. Target age is 11 through 12. Certainly to use condoms. I think one of the things that we, Brenda, talked about a little bit is the abstinence-only programs. In my own practice here in San Francisco, I have a lot of young adults, adolescents who engage in oral sex only, thinking that they're still virgins, you know, abstinence only, and they don't realize that through oral sex you can get sexually transmitted infections. Now, we have a lot to do as far as education and prevention.
Thank you very much. Dr. Charles Wibblesman is a pediatrician at Kaiser Permanente in San Francisco. Brenda Wilson is an NPR science correspondent. She joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, the coach of the Rutgers women's basketball team joins us, Vivian Stringer, on her new memoir, Standing Tall. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Robert Smith.